This is OffRamp, news, arts, and life in Southern California. I'm John Raby. Thanks for joining us. We're looking at the big board now, OffRamp producer Quina Kim and I. What do we got going this week?
Well, it looks like there's a story about Lori Hassold, who's a sculptor.
She makes amazing stuff out of stuff she finds.
And then the Herald Examiner reunion.
A great paper that really seemed to be an off-ramp kind of paper.
And then Frank Stoltz has a story about Iraqis living in L.A.
He's going to talk with actually a psychotherapist and get her thoughts as we're, of course, marking the fifth anniversary of the war in Iraq. Okay, back to work. That's all coming up on the show.
All right, got to go.
Off-ramp producer Quina Kim.
I have a message for the gang members. Stay away from our schools. Your niece, your grandchild, your son, your daughter could be coming to the school. Give them a chance to get an education so that they don't have to suffer the same nightmare you suffer as a gang member.
We're starting this week's show close to home. My home, that is, Cypress Park, which is kind of near Dodger Stadium and Mount Washington and Highland Park. In February, a man who was reportedly trying to stay out of the gang life was gunned down in what turned into a huge gun battle between cops and gang members. What made it especially shocking was that the man was shot to death outside Aragon Elementary School during school hours, so little kids saw the shooting happen. In our neighborhood, we're seeing a lot more cops lately, and on Monday, Councilman Ed Reyes held a news conference to announce a proposed law that would mandate jail time for anyone with an illegal gun 1,000 feet within a school in L.A. After the official proceedings, I spoke with Reyes and some of the others who attended. Suzette Gutierrez spoke at today's news conference. You're a mom?
I have two children, a 6 and a 7-year-old girls. They both attend elementary here.
Did you hear about the shooting first, or did they hear about it? How'd that all happen that day?
I really am very reluctant to discuss that, but...
Why are you reluctant to talk about it?
Fear.
You don't like to bring it up again? Or
no,
you feel like you might be retaliated against if you speak out?
A little bit of everything.
Yeah.
And I want to return to the safety within myself that I felt when I would bring my kids to school. I want to be able to reassure them confidently when they ask me, how's today going to be? I remember my 6-year-old getting on the phone with her dad that day and telling her, Daddy, we had a lockdown today. Kind of embarrassing to hear something like that come out of a 6-year-old. I have to admit, my 7-year-old is a lot more collected and reassured me that safety is not a problem at her school. I know, I'm very proud of her.
Yeah, but that's scary for them to be so worldly already.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this ordinance is going to do some good?
Like I've said before, any little bit helps. It's a beginning.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Michael is here. He's 11. Do you go to Aragon Elementary School?
Yes, I do.
What grade are you in?
5th.
Do you remember what happened that day of the shooting?
The day of the shooting that was here, I was inside and some of the kindergartens right there saw the shooting, saw the death of him, and we had a lockdown.
Wow. What'd you think?
It was scary. I didn't know that there was a shooting. I didn't hear the gunshot at all.
Did your folks talk about it with you or your grandma?
They say, like, stay away from the gang members and don't talk to them. Just walk away from them.
Councilmember Reyes, we last talked with you at Langer's. We were talking about MacArthur Park, and you were saying there was an upsurge in crime there. That was explained by the fact that things quieted down in MacArthur Park, and so they put the officers someplace else. Did the same thing happen here in Cypress Park, where you had it quieted down for a long time, and then January, things started heating up?
Yes, it became very clear that South LA, South Central, Southeast, had a huge spike in crime. And so they started tactfully moving the different resources to the hottest areas. When that happens, we become victims of our own success. And so MacArthur Park went through a lull, spike went up, now we have to respond. Here, unfortunately, it's happening again. Because of the way our laws are structured, many of the bad guys, the gun runners and drug dealers and those who are involved in the gangs, well, we dealt with them 5-6 years ago. And many of them have gotten out. And as they come out, they re-engage. And a lot of the youngsters that have gone through that experience of trying to become a gang member are out there trying to prove themselves. And so you had this law where if you used a gun for the first time, it was up to the judge whether you spent any time in jail.
I've been working outside a lot, and I keep hearing traffic stops down on Cypress. You hear a little of the
motorcycle cops pulling people over.
Right.
I guess that's part of this increased police presence in Cypress Park right now?
Well, what we have is a coordination between our traffic officers and our police department that covers this area with our senior lead officers and the captain. When we know that there's retaliation rumors, then we want a presence of police. And so we're trying to cover all of our area by blanketing it with different types of enforcement so that we can capture the incidental lawbreaker as well as have a presence to hopefully prevent that retaliation and minimize exposure to the innocent folks who get caught in the crossfire.
L.A. City Councilman Ed Reyes. Later in the show, we'll talk with him about growing up in Cypress Park.
I just finished sewing up a dead boy. I pronounced him dead at 10:34 p.m. Sunday. It's now 11:27 p.m. I know I won't be able to get to sleep for a long time. I feel like I shouldn't.
Dr. Mauricio Heilbronn.
I'm a trauma surgeon at St. Mary Medical Center in Long Beach. I was sulking in my office on Palm Sunday because I missed yet another important moment in my 5-year-old son's life. A tarantula crawled all over him at his best friend's birthday party. And as I was looking at the photo, my wife emailed to me. It's a glorious photo of this big, hairy arachnid on my son's face. I was called to the ER for a gunshot wound to the chest. Now, that's bad, but around these parts, not much of a surprise. Then the ER secretary added, he's a 12-year-old. In the ER, there are doctors and nurses and techs, volunteers, firemen, policemen, paramedics swarming around this impossibly small figure. An ER doctor blurts out, gunshot wound to the chest. Pulse is in the field, but... And then he hands me the knife as if to say, here, this is yours. Now, I think the kid is dead. Or if not dead, then he certainly is unsalvageable, which is a horrible word to use for a human being. But if he's to have any hope of survival, the only way to save him is to crack him open and try to plug up the holes in his chest. It is the trauma surgery equivalent of a Hail Mary football pass. This isn't just a difficult situation. This is a nightmare. In a few seconds, I'm inside his chest and it's filled with blood. The blood just spills out like a waterfall onto the floor. I see a tear in his lungs and a big, ragged hole in his heart. All the blood and IV fluids that my colleagues are pouring into this patient are flowing out that hole and onto my shoes. I put my finger in the hole. It's such a big hole and such a small heart, but the blood and fluid still keeps coming out. So my other hand starts searching for another hole, and I find one on the other side of the heart. I put my finger inside, and my fingers touch. His heart is empty. The boy's family is brought in while I'm bathed in his blood. His mother's begging me to do what I can. She tells me to take her heart and give it to him. Now, I know that's not possible, and she knows that's not possible, but she could not be more serious. In her eyes, I see a soul that I am about to crush with a little nod of my head. As the howl of grief shakes the entire ER, I am so angry. Why do we still sell guns in this country? What is this child doing on the streets after 10 o'clock at night? Why are we sending our innocent young soldiers overseas and ignoring these gangbangers who are terrorizing our streets? But I have to try and put these thoughts away because now, in front of his family, I have to sew him up. Now all my adrenaline is gone and my shoulders sag. I feel myself starting to cry and I know that I can't stop. I have no way of hiding because literally everybody in the emergency room is looking at me, including his mother. And my hands are busy and bloody, and I can't wipe my tears away. I make eye contact with the mom and whisper, I'm sorry. I want to quit, but I'm on call till 8 in the morning, and then I have office all the next day. But hopefully, I'll be home for dinner. And when I come through that door, I'll hear my son yell, Daddy. He won't know what that moment means to me, but I know it'll restore me. It'll help me keep coming back to this sort of work. Help me put my heart back together again.
Dr. Mauricio Heilbronn. His essay first appeared in a different form in the Long Beach Press Telegram.
This is Off Ramp. I'm John Raby at Philippe's with Off Ramp literary commentator Mark Haefeli. We're talking about the week's news, including the death of author Arthur C. Clarke, the famous science fiction author. And Mark said he told Doubleday to pick up that book, and they didn't. A few months ago, you told us about editing Philip K. Dick. Doubleday turned down 2001?
I'm going to have to do something about my scapegrace career as a science fiction editor 40 years ago. It was a lot of fun. But the fact is that we didn't think it was history. We thought it was a business decision back then. I saw this. I read the book of 2001 before I saw the movie, before I think anyone saw the movie, because it was offered to us a few months before the movie came out. And it came with the princely price of $100,000 in 1968 dollars. Of course, this is probably equivalent of a $1 million ask now. I put on my sort of propeller beanie and went into the editorial meeting and said, you know, this is like an incredible main book. The movie is going to be by Kubrick. It's going to be huge. The book is going to sell because people are going to want to know what the movie's all about. I think we got a bestseller here, and we're getting it for a bargain price. No one agreed with me.
But that's not all. You were also at the East Coast premiere of 2001 next to Isaac Asimov.
Between Isaac Asimov and Lester Del Rey, old-time science fiction guy who also was a famous editor at the time, too. But this became a legendary occasion, and it's often misreported that when Hal the Computer started killing off crew members, Isaac stood up in the movie theater and screamed, "He can't do that. It's against first law," which, of course, was Isaac's first law of robotics, which he had invented in iRobot. A robot can't kill a human.
And this exposes the rift between young and old in the sci-fi community and their reaction to 2001.
Yeah, everybody I talked to in the old line science fiction community, in fact, I didn't have to talk to them because they were only too willing to spout out to me, particularly in the bar next door afterwards where Isaac actually did make that statement, sitting down over fried chicken. Everyone hated the movie. The consensus among the old line science fiction guys, the guys who started up in the 30s and had hit a little prominence in the 50s, was that if they'd only been given that much money, they would have cranked out a much better movie than that upstart Stanley Kubrick could have.
What was Arthur C. Clarke like?
Unflappable, graying, British, completely in command of his material, and absolutely the object of adulation of science fiction fans, old and young. And this was lucky for him, because he wound up standing in front of the 1968 science fiction convention, which actually happened a few months after that showing, defending his role in the movie and how great he thought the movie was. And he had everybody in the palm of his hand. I know this was difficult because a few hours before at the same event, I got up as the only guy around who'd actually read the book, which had not yet come out yet, and got shouted down by people who liked the movie who assumed I was going to attack it.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, John.
Off-Ramp literary commentator Mark Haefeli. Over breakfast at Philippe's, this is Off-Ramp on 89.3 KPCC. Coming up, meet photographer Stephen Berkman.
And certainly the idea of this photograph is that people are led to believe possibly that this is something that the patient would look at to relax them while they're being amputated upon.
This is Off Ramp on 89.3 KPCC.